Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Age of Radio.
That's the night that I told you, like, there was like a woman who could like squirt, and she would like go to the edge of the stage,
God.
And she would squirt, and there were dudes like literally opening their mouths and like
God.
Trying to like lap it up as it was like coming their way. And I'm just like,
as a teenager, it is traumatizing.
That is disgusting, my friend. I don't know if you went to Catholic school, but I did, as patrons have heard, and I am deathly afraid of venereal diseases. And seeing people do that immediately went me go, oh. And then I was like, I had to choose a seat after that. Where do I sit at this horseshoe bar that hasn't been fucking sprayed by like the pussy skunk like all over the place? Fuck. So anyway, I don't like strip clubs.
Welcome to Super Movie Brothers. Let's start the show.
Welcome to Super Movie Bros. I'm your host, Super Movie Brother Dave.
I'm your host, Super Movie Brother Jay.
And boy, do we have a fun episode for you guys. I mean, it's kind of a lot like the last episode and the episode before that. But they're always fun. It's always the same thing. But
to
it's
us.
Fun.
Look, hopefully to
well,
you.
It's fun to us. I mean, yeah. Sex is always fun, even if you're doing the same thing every single time.
Exactly.
We're still going to make you come, is what I'm getting at.
The gift that keeps on giving.
This week's episode, we're adding a new segment, which we'll get into shortly. It's just going to be called Facts. And that's where I ask people, listeners, to share their favorite movie facts with us. Each week, we'll read a different movie fact. We might discuss it a little bit, depending on how interesting it is. And at the end of every month, a listener will win. One of the four listeners, we will choose which one had the best movie fact, and they will win a sticker pack that I will mail to them, unless you're from the UK.
Yeah, it's like a trivia thing, you know?
In which case, I'm not mailing it to you. If you're in Australia, I'm not mailing it to you. I'm going to be honest with you. I will send you pictures of what the stickers look like.
we'll give you a shout out. You know, we'll give you some love.
For sure. Yeah. Definitely. I mean, so that's coming up in a little bit. I'll give you guys some information then on how you can submit your answers and stuff like that, because we did a social media post this time, because that's just like the low hanging fruit quick way. I don't want it to be that easy. I want you guys to have to email. I want you guys to have to call. And we do have a Super Movie Bros hotline, if everyone remembers. So I'm going to be giving out the hotline number. And that way, when people give facts, I don't have to read them off. I can just play their audio right here in the show.
I miss that fucking hotline much.
Exactly. Also, you can say whatever the fuck you want on the hotline. So, and remember, we're an X-rated show. We go as deep as you want to go, you know. We are practically the prolapsed anus of fucking movie podcasts.
Well, this has always been true.
but also, this week, we got some news that we're going to be going through. We have a trailer park breakdown. It's trailer park. We're going to be doing the Venom 2 trailer. It's not going to be as long as the last trailer, but there are a few new things that I want to discuss. Oh, yeah, if you know what I'm talking about. But the fact is, it doesn't look like it's shaping up to be the movie that me and Jay, or more so me, really want it to be. And then, of course, we got our reviews that we are going to be getting into. So I watched what Disney decided to do when Johnny Depp was in hot water and wasn't available for another Pirates movie. Jungle Cruise. So, Jay, what are you going to be reviewing for everybody this week?
I will be reviewing Green Knight and also what I've been watching. You know, I got a film out there.
So, Jay, without any further delay, let's get into this week's news.
Thank you.
news story. Jay, this one's yours. Take it away. Take it away. Get. Take it away.
What news story is that, Dave?
Jesus Christ, your fucking Apple TV one, you fucking fuck. Jesus. It's literally the only news story you've shared with me. Because you're the one that brought it up. You said it was huge news when we were doing the Patreon. So I'm leaving all this in. I want everybody to know how terrible you are to work with.
Jesus fuck. No, he never preps me. That's what it is. He just throws me under the spotlight. And no idea that I'm supposed to read this off.
That's the only news story you've shared with me in weeks.
Jesus Christ. All right. Apple.
Yeah.
Finally landed another big property deal. Argyle.
I got themselves a whale.
So Argyle is a $200 million deal that, you know, will eventually hopefully start a franchise. And this is also, you know, developed and will be directed by Matthew Vaughn with a great ensemble cast already casted, starring Henry Cavill, Cavill, Sam Rockwell, Bryce Dallas Howard, Bryan Cranston, Catherine O'Hara, John Cena, and Samuel L. Jackson. So really interesting, you know, ensemble stars. I don't know what the tone will be. That's my biggest question mark.
Right. Because storyline for Hollywood, what this matters is that it's Apple finally using their money.
Big time.
Yeah. I mean, because Netflix hasn't been afraid to use their money to acquire Blockbuster, but most of what they acquire is schlock. It's mostly what if you're playing video games, you would call like shovelware. It's just like stuff to pad out the network. With Apple, it seems like it's a little bit more of substance. They want to go for more quality than quantity. Even though Argyle, it doesn't sound like it's the type of thing that everybody's going to be interested in, right? It's not the big summer blockbuster. It's nothing.
No,
like,
I think it should.
Something like the MCU or the DCEU or anything like that.
Well,
it's a spy thriller, Jay. So it speaks to you.
Yeah,
that's what you're into. Not me so much, but I'll check it out because I think Apple TV kind of, and I want to use it.
I think they're going on the heels of The Gray Man. You know, the Russo brothers Netflix big movie with Ryan Gosling and Chris Evans. I think, you know, it's on the vein of that. It's going to be a globe trotting type of like Bond-esque, you know, fun, you know, spy action movie. I don't know much more than that, but I'm assuming that that's what this is going to be. It's going to be in the vein of that, trying to, you know, utilize that kind of world again, you know, because we haven't had much properties out there like that recently other than Bond.
Right. Next news story. RJ, here's an interesting one that that came up. One of DC's film presidents has now gone on record with Aaron Couch at The Hollywood Reporter and has said that James Gunn has more DC projects waiting for him over at Warner Brothers. I find this interesting, right? Because wasn't he just like last week and the week before, like absolutely lampooning the superhero genre that it's bankrupt, you know, for ideas? It's gone as far as it can go. You know, there's no one doing anything new out there. Me and you talked about how that's more of like a marketing ploy for Suicide Squad,
sure,
as it is the anti-superhero movie, quote unquote. Or at least that's the way he wants to market it and everything like that. But you found a Martin Scorsese quote that was like in direct contradiction to James Gunn's quote.
Well, not really. It was an old statement from Martin Scorsese when he was promoting The Irishman, and he kind of bashed the whole, like, you know, Marvel cinema, you know, universe, and how all those movies are just kind of not cinema, and you know, and
right. And what James Gunn had said coming out against Marvel is the only thing that Martin Scorsese could do to get press for his movie.
Exactly.
He's creating his own movie in the shadow of Marvel. He uses
He's not going to bash down from, you know, any kind of question.
Yeah, and, but it's too. So anyway, that quote from James Gunn is from 2 years ago, right? When he was still very much employed by Marvel. He still very much is. There's still a Guardians of the Galaxy 3 coming, which is written and directed by James Gunn. There's still a Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special, which will be on Disney+, which is being written and directed by James Gunn. James Gunn is doing what master salesmen do. He's selling the lie to one, and then he'll go and he'll sell the lie to the other, right? I don't think James Gunn thinks that superhero movies are bankrupt. What I think is he thinks that some superhero movies are bankrupt. He probably won't say which because he can't get in hot water with either. But I think that he very much thinks that his probably is, you know, fresh and new. And if the, you know, Rotten Tomatoes score and all the critical reviews pre-release of that movie or anything to go by, sounds like he might be right. Right. I mean, sounds like he might be tapping into something with this like anti superhero type thing. But that's not nothing new. Right. I mean, we're getting the Boys TV series that's going into season 3 right now. That's clearly, you know, kind of like the anti superhero. Right. It's making fun of that genre, making fun of those tropes. We've been getting stuff in that vein for quite some time. We've been getting superhero movies for quite some time. This is nothing new. It's just marketing is all what it comes down to.
I think that's really what it is ultimately. And it's just, it's added pizzazz to the world that he is in and the film that he made. And it's apparently a bombastic film, you know, so it's kind of all part of it.
He's not being hypocritical by then taking another DC project when he's done with the Guardian stuff that he has contractually obligated to do. You know, he's not being hypocritical. He'll probably do the same thing then. You know, who knows what those projects could be, but they could be, again, something else that's in the line of like a Suicide Squad, because I don't think you get James Gunn and you put him on a Superman project, right? You don't put him on a project that is one of your big tentpole heroes. You give him the exactly what he has to play with. He's got the fucking dime store, like he's got the flea market bin of toys.
Well, yeah, I mean,
but, that's what he's been given.
But also to breathe life into something, right, as well, to perhaps, right, you know, save a property, a la, I mean, Suicide Squad.
Guys like Matthew Vaughn, who get the brand new Batman toy, they get to pull it out of the package, and it smells like that. Oh, that brand new polypropylene smells so good. It's a fresh toy. It's fucking hot. Everyone wants that toy. But James Gunn is over there at the flea market, happily picking through the 10-cent toys in the fucking bin. And he's just like, you know, I'll take this King Shark and I'll play with it. You know, I'll play with this Drax the Destroyer. Does anyone remember that? You know, and he's fantastic at doing that. So I think that's exactly what DC has in store. Also, coming from the DC and Warner Brothers side, you want to sound healthy. You want to sound like you're going to continue making movies in this vein, because the pre-buzz around the Suicide Squad is that it's fucking fantastic. And you want people to remember that that's fantastic. And the fact that it's so fantastic, we're already greenlighting more pictures with the guy who made that shit. So go see that shit, and then come see more shit.
Yeah.
It's marketing. Marketing 101. Create a product that people want, then make them demand more. Next news story. All right, Jay, just keeping in the vein of DC here. Cobra Kai's Zolo Maridueña. He is in talks to play the Blue Beetle in the Blue Beetle HBO Max movie, which is coming out. We don't know when this movie's slated for any type of release, but Cobra Kai's Zolo Maridueña, he will be playing Jaime Ramez Blue Beetle, which is the one that's in the Young Justice. He's been part of like Teen Titans before and stuff like that. He's the most recognizable version of the Blue Beetle. And I think that this is absolutely fantastic casting, because, you know, he plays the young kid in Cobra Kai, the very first student of Johnny Lawrence. And he is like at that right, like teenage age to play like a elderly high schoolman, like mm-hmm. junior, senior high school year kid who gets a, you know, an alien symbiote, essentially, like much like Venom, a scarab that attaches itself to his back and gives him superpowers. I think it's perfect. I think it's perfect casting. And I think they found an actor who is already proven himself on another series to come into a series that'll probably have very much the same, or a movie that will have very much the same type of comedy elements. Expect this to be like HBO Max's Spider-Man, like the current Sony Spider-Man movies that are going on right now. I expect it to be kind of similar to that.
All right, cool. I'm looking forward to it.
Next news story. All right, Jay, remember TMNT? You know, they did like two movies that were produced by Michael Bay. Yeah, they weren't great. You know, I mean, I was going to say they weren't bad, but no, they are bad. They were fucking terrible. I've only watched each of them once, and I'm happy to never go back to them again. I would rather watch Turtles in Time, the third Turtles movie. If I keep going away from my mic, it's because I'm swatting a moth that just keeps coming at me. It's coming at me, bro, all the fucking time. I don't know why it's coming for my neck.
No, they're harmless.
I know they are, but it doesn't mean I want it sitting on my face, Jay.
That's your mom's job.
You just wants to be friends.
Just wants to be friends. But anyway, so they were awful. I'd rather watch Turtles in Time again than watch any of the two Michael Bay produced ones. Well, guess what? Paramount has greenlit another Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. This time, it will be produced by none other than Michael Bay. Again.
Motherfucker.
Michael Bay. It's always Michael Bay. It's like Silicon Valley. Always blue. Always blue. Always blue. Always blue. That's what Paramount's doing. Always Bay. Always Bay. Always Bay. But this time it will be written by Colin and Casey Jost. So,
well, I am kind of excited about that, and it is live action. So I'm actually optimistic now.
Well, I mean, the other ones were quote unquote live action, you know, more CGI than anything. But yeah, the last ones were live action as well.
Old school '90s, like people in a fucking turtle suit shit, not CGI turtles.
Right. So, and obviously, you know, Colin Jost with someone like that coming on the right, I think, you know, his weekend updates, like everything he writes for that is some of the funniest stuff that's on SNL right now between him and Michael Che. I don't know how, like, that sketch comedy writer, like, really transfers to being a writer for a TMNT film.
I think they just grew up with the turtles like us. You know, they're our age.
So.
I think it's just going to be.
I hope that's what it turns out to be.
One of those things. Because, nostalgic.
Because if I hear, like, turtles cracking jokes about, like, Joe Biden's foreign policy, I'm going to be like, that's. I know you used to write for the Harvard Comedy Journal. I get it, Colin Jost. You're a fucking smart guy. You're wicked smart, and you dip your wick in a fucking wicked pussy. All right? I understand. I don't need that type of comedy in my turtles. I need them to say things like cowabunga, you know, and that they're having a shell of a good time.
Where's the
pizza? Pizza dude's got 30 seconds. Next news story. All right, Jay, this is a news story you shared with me because it excites you a little bit more than it excites me, because it involves Martin Scorsese, who I love his films. I don't want to hear him talk anymore, but I do love his films. Although I lie. I do want to hear him talk because I love the way he gets all, like, nervous and he pushes his finger up on his glasses and he pushes them up. He's got those big fucking fat fucking glasses that look like my fucking grandmother's. I absolutely love the way he looks.
And who is this?
Martin Scorsese.
Oh, yes, of course. How Martin can you Scorsese. Not?
So, but, you know, I don't like hearing his opinion on, like, the state of movies. I get it. He is an auteur. Like, yeah,
he's old school. He's an auteur.
Quote, unquote, superior movies and stuff like that. But guess what? The theater system will only be made healthy not by movies made by Martin Scorsese, but by movies made by people like James Gunn.
He
can throw shade all he wants. But in the end, the theater system gets healthy by big blockbusters.
He's not talking about health. He's talking about the quality of cinema.
He's talking about cinema versus theater
aspect of it all, making sure that, you know, nothing gets lost. Because what's going to happen if all we made was James Gunn movies, there will be no good movies coming out forever. I mean, like,
I don't care, you know? Jay. I don't care. Fuck Martin Scorsese. Fuck you. All right. Fuck you and your fucking
opinions. I stand behind Scorsese because I understand where he's coming from on that. It's definitely.
Well, good.
You know,
good. Why don't you go hang out in the part of the park that Martin Scorsese goes and throws nickels at men to fucking suck his balls?
I do.
Why don't you go hang out there?
I do. It's great people watching.
No, you're going to be sucking his balls, Jay. It's not people watching. It's fucking Gargo and Martin Scorsese's saggy, and they probably taste like marinara balls.
His heart was in the right place. So
Brendan Fraser.
I'm in Scorsese's camp, not guns.
So anyway, Brendan Fraser has joined the next Martin Scorsese film, Killers of the Flower Moon. I feel like that's the way you have to sell that, that you have to say that title. Like, I can't come in with energy and be like, Killers of the Flower Moon. It's got to be Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah. I think that's about right.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. It's got to have a little bit more gravitas. So,
yeah, it's going to be
know
like
a whole lot more about this movie than I do.
It's going to be a little bit more of like in a vein of like a Western, you know, put it that way. And this is going to be starring Leonardo DiCaprio. And
right,
amongst
and it's also
other
produced
people.
By him as well, right? Sure. This is the one that like Leo like got behind and produced, yeah.
And
it's
well, and
also coming
actually
to Netflix
it's co-
as well.
It's co, you know, led by Jesse Plemons, to be honest, as well.
Right,
so they're kind of like the main co leads.
And it's rivalry. It's supposed to rival Irishman in length, and it's going to be close to 17 hours. Am I right?
You never know. You never know.
You
so, I mean,
never
it's.
Know.
It, you know, it's going to be a mystery. It's in the 20s. You know, I don't. It's not going to be black or white. You know, it's going to be partially on the Native American landscape.
Right.
It's going to be it might be a chore to sit through, like The Irishman, but probably a little bit more somber. You know, but hopefully,
welcome
he's
to your
able.
Fifth intermission of.
You know,
Killers of the Flower Moon.
I just hope that he's able to bring that kind of energy that Fincher brings for his long movies. You know, Fincher has that capability of having a movie like that and be very long still, but have this sense of like, I don't know, there's some kind of engaging energy to it throughout that Scorsese, I think, sometimes can lack. A la The Irishman. You know, there's a lot of more ups and down, up and down, up and down, you know, throughout the runtime. Even though it is still engaging, it doesn't have that same kind of power. And that's just one example. But we'll see. We'll see. I'm definitely interested. I'm really happy for Brendan Fraser's, you know, slow rebound. And he's kind of embracing his return with his big boy status.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, the
hey,
big...
man, fuck... Fuck flower. I'm sorry. Fuck Flowers of the Killer Moon.
Yeah, but I'll be honest. I have a very vague feeling that he scored this role from good word of mouth from his
good.
Darren Aronofsky
good
film that just got fucking filmed.
I'm happy to see Brendan Fraser coming back.
Called The Whale.
Yeah. I don't care what he's being put in as long as it's quality. And obviously the Darren Aronofsky movie and Killers. The Flower Moon.
Yeah.
That's quality. But if you want Brendan Fraser off the cuff, then please, so they keep making seasons, go over to HBO Max and watch the shit out of Doom Patrol and watch him as Robot Man. I fucking love it.
Yeah, I think this is like version of the McConaughey resurgence type thing. You know,
his McConaissance.
I think it's a little bit of that. I think it's a little bit of that.
I feel so bad for Brendan Fraser because like, first off, his acting career started to go into shit because he was this dude who had a physique, and a lot of what he was hired for was that physique. And he got hurt on the set of, I believe it was the third Mummy movie. And that was towards like dwindling of his career once the Mummy movies were like coming to an end. But after that, he went through, like, he couldn't work because he fucked his back up so bad. And then on top of that, he was going through a very tumultuous divorce. And, of course, he developed spending habits of a man who was making millions of dollars a year and, you know, had to continue a lifestyle similar to that, also paying alimony to a wife who had become accustomed to that type of lifestyle as well. I don't know what their split was about, so that's not taking sides or anything. That's just a fact of the matter. So the dude like fell in dire straits for a very long time, and he's slowly been crawling his way
very
back.
Very slowly.
And just seeing him here, I'm just like, you know what? Good for you. Good for you, Brendan Fraser. I hope good things for you, because from what I've heard, you're a nice guy. So I like seeing nice guys.
Yeah, I'm happy about that
a little bit.
Because I honestly do not know much about him at all. I've rarely seen any interviews from him. I don't know his personality, but I do like him as an actor, and I think he does have that kind of that pull on screen. You know, he has that kind of face. He's got that kind of thing. You know, that it factor. So. You know,
he's also got that eye that looks in multiple directions
exactly.
at once.
Exactly. Kind of. If you find the right director or cinematographer to know how to enhance that,
Yeah,
you know, for the yeah, right exactly. role, it's going to be working.
Yeah, it's he's kind of like that crab in Moana.
Just pick an eye, babe. I can't concentrate on what I'm saying if you keep. Yeah, pick one.
Next news story. All right, Jay, this one's brief. I'm just pretty geeked, pretty stoked about this. Next week, next Friday, as of recording this, August 11th will be the series premiere of Marvel's What If on Disney Plus. But the show's producer has been coming out to talk about the series a little bit, just kind of like in the lead up to it. And one of the things that she keeps talking about, AC Bradley, was that she kept bringing all these ideas to Marvel and Disney and saying, like, I would like to write a story in the What If universe that cameos Luke Skywalker. And they were like, absolutely not.
You want the impossible.
She wanted to get the Millennium Falcon in a scene. Absolutely not. And then she also pitched a story to Kevin Feige and the rest of the Marvel execs. And apparently, after that story was pitched, they forced her to sign a non-disclosure agreement because the story that she pitched was the same exact story that James Gunn pitched for Guardians of the Galaxy 3, and that movie has already been greenlit.
That doesn't follow. No, I wanted more.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's a little bit of like a boast for like, hey, if you, like... Guardians of the Galaxy 3 is going to be so crazy, it could have been a what if. So apparently AC Bradley, she tried fucking hard to get some of these crazy ideas in there, and they wouldn't let her. But what she is going on to say is, like, some of the stuff they let her do is really, really exciting. She threw so much at the wall with them, and she got very little rejection. Like, only these, like, big things were, like, the things that they rejected. So it seems like it's going to be a very, very fun series to check out. Season 1 is going to be 9 episodes. Season 2, already greenlit, already starting the animation work on, will be coming out next year in 2022, also going to be 9 episodes. So me and Jay get to start our breakdown for it next week, and I can't wait. So that's gonna do it for our news this week. Jay, you and I got a trailer park to do, buddy, because Carnage and Venom have dropped their new trailer. So we are going to be breaking down Venom 2 Let There Be Carnage Trailer 2 in this week's Trailer Park.
Cut the beat and let the music play. No trailer park. Shout out to Dave and Jay. I don't surf, but there's a newer wave. We've been on since Trust God Save the Right Stop. I don't want to flow until I know that the bass drop.
All right, so I'm not going to do, like, the full breakdown like I did last time. Like, I already talked about who Shriek was. I already talked about Cletus Kasady and the idea that this is loosely based on the Maximal Carnage storyline. It might possibly be based on the Ultimate Carnage storyline, which was going on recently in Marvel. But one of the things that I skipped over last time was Detective Mulligan, who is being played by Stephen Graham here. We get more scenes with him. We got scenes from him last time as he was reading the Daily Bugle, and he kind of has, like, an investigation board going on behind him. He is apparently the police officer who's working with Eddie Brock. Eddie Brock is interviewing Cletus Kasady because Cletus Kasady promises that interviews with Eddie Brock, he will divulge the location of the bodies of some of his victims. Hmm. So Mulligan kind of gets with Eddie Brock to kind of get him to go in there on this mission. Interesting thing about Mulligan, though, his character in the comic books also has a symbiote. He has the child symbiote of the Spawn symbiote of Carnage, whose name is Toxin. So some people are kind of theorizing here that it's very possible that Toxin may pick up the Spider-Man role in Maximum Carnage, in that Maximum Carnage was Spider-Man and Venom teaming up to take down Carnage and Shriek. So people are saying that it's going to be Mulligan who teams up with Venom to take down Carnage in the end. I hope that's not the case. It's bad enough that the first movie ended with this CGI battle of two symbiotes just being glue all over the place. If they're going to do 3 this time, I would just say, like, the laws of escalation shouldn't apply.
What about escalation?
Escalation.
We start carrying semi-automatics, they buy automatics.
We start wearing Kevlar. They buy armor-piercing rounds. And you're wearing a mask.
Lady, we should be out there snacking on bad guys. I am a predator. I need to be free.
You have got to get control of your aggression. Or you will get hauled off into Area 51.
You live in my body. You live by my rules.
I'm sorry. I don't know what came over me. Please, let me fix it. So I can bring it again. You are a loser.
All I ever wanted in this world is carnage.
Oh, shit.
Where are you going?
That is a red one.
You need to come out right now.
I will let you eat everybody.
Promise.
I promise.
Oh, yeah.
So some of the other different things that are going on here, we get more of like Eddie and the symbiote together in what I would say is like more cringeworthy this time than even it was the last time. You know, we get him and the symbiote arguing, and he's just like, "We're hungry. We must eat." And, you know, he breaks his nose. He goes, "Come here. Let me heal it so I can break it again." And it's like, oh, my God. I don't want this the whole time. And I was talking to my wife, and my wife was like, well, like, why is it like this? Like, this isn't how, like, Venom is in the comics. And I was like, you know why it's like this? Because in the comic books, there's always been, at least early on in the Venom storylines, there was always a strife between the symbiote and Eddie Brock. And the strife was that the symbiote had found the perfect host already. Mm-hmm. It found Peter Parker, and it attached itself to him. And right. Peter Parker rejected it. And it always wants to get back to Peter Parker, but it always resented him as well for rejecting it. Also, Eddie Brock, you know, owner of said host, you know, is basically takes that as, I am the imperfect host. You know what I mean? So they've always been at somewhat of an odds with each other, at least in those early stories of Venom. But since they don't have the Spider-Man character to kind of add that element to it here, instead they give them these rules also, like, that the symbiote doesn't want to follow. And it really bothered me that it's like, here's a tire hanging from a chain, and now the Venom symbiote is just going to be biting on it, because presumably he is a caged dog that doesn't have a yard to run in, so he's going to want to be destructive. And I was like, I don't know if I buy that. I don't know if I want to buy that. I don't know if I want to see that. I don't know if that's like what I really signed on for. You know, it just goes and continues to show me that there is going to be this continuous disparity between the dark tones and the comedy. You know what I mean? The comedy's just not fucking landing, man. It's not landing at all. And the more and more I see it, the more and more it's starting to grate my fucking nerves. And then I have to think about watching 2 hours of it.
Well, you know, it's just one of those things where I think ultimately it still looks better than the first movie.
It does. It does.
I gotta try and stay optimistic.
Jay, this trailer ends with like them seeing Carnage, like Venom and Eddie seeing Carnage in the church. And Venom goes, "Oh, no, 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 it's a red one." And it's like, am I supposed to know what a red one means? I mean, I guess technically I know what a red one means. It means that it's a perfect symbiotic relationship, and that the blood is perfectly mixed. And we see that when Cletus Kasady changes, because unlike Venom, where like it, you know, the head comes over him like a hood and then closes him and stuff like that, we actually see Carnage bursting out of. Like bursting through and completely destroying the body of Cletus Kasady. Like when he changes, it first starts coming out of his eyeball, and then you see like him just shred apart as the symbiote takes him over. So they are fully symbiotic, you know, incompatico or compatico. So that's why Venom is extremely scared. But what really gets me is when he's like, "Fine, I'll let you eat all the people. I'll let you eat all the people that you want." And he goes, "Are you serious?" and he's like, "Yeah." And then literally, as if the fucking Kool-Aid man was bursting through the wall, he goes, "Oh yeah.
Oh yeah."
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but then go hopping and skipping right towards the fucking monster to fight.
The symbiote goes,
"And be the hero."
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I didn't like it either.
I was like, holy shit, is that a purposeful reference to the Kool-Aid Man? Are you telling me that we're gonna break through some walls here?
Oh yeah.
That's the thing. Now I'm not laughing with this movie. I'm not laughing at your joke. I'm laughing at this movie because I don't think that it realized how dumb it was.
Yeah, I gotta look into the writer a little more. I don't know.
So, I mean, that's some of the stuff that I was picking up on. We get more images of Carnage this time. We get more close-ups of Carnage. One of the things that I was wondering, like, there's times where we're seeing Carnage, where Carnage is, like, skinny. Like, we see him going through Ravencroft. We see him doing that breakout or whatever the prison was he was in. I know Ravencroft is where Shriek is, but whatever prison break he's breaking out of. And the guards are firing at him, and we can see that he can spread the symbiote away. And the bullets can go through him without actually hitting him, which, again, goes into that perfect symbiotic relationship between them. But he's pretty thin. He's pretty skinny there. When we see him at the end in the church, he's bigger than Venom. So, like, I get that the symbiote can change size and stuff like that, but it doesn't change mass. So I was just wondering that, like, is it, like, the more people that Cletus Kasady kills, since obviously the way he got the symbiote was as this trailer shows us, he bit the hand of Eddie Brock, and then he got the symbiote in him, which is dumb. I don't know why you'd go to a prison and put your hands on the fucking bars near a fucking serial killer. You're a moron, Eddie Brock. You deserve to lose your woman. You deserve to lose your cat. You deserve to live alone with this fucking dumb alien that imitates the Kool-Aid Man.
Oh, yeah. Every day, all day long.
But anyway, he gets bigger. And we get those scenes where, like, where Carnage, like, the one where he throws the guard up against the wall and he shoves his tongue, gives him that deep tongue, that one where, like, you have to push a girl off you a little bit and you're like, whoa, 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 whoa. Light tongue, you know, maybe go deep a little bit, but then back to light tongue. Don't keep doing the deep thing. Not for me. But anyway, he shoves his tongue all the way down the guard's throat, and it almost looks like he's, like, eating his innards. And I'm wondering if that is how Carnage grows in size, power, prowess, all that good shit. And I think, like, that's really it for my breakdown. I don't get too much more deep into it.
There's not much to get as deep into it. It's just a trailer.
It would just be more speculation.
And with these kind of trailers, at that point, yeah. Well, they're going to be possibly not even having some of this material in the movie itself.
No, it's very possible. But the last thing I wanted to bring up, Jay, did you catch the quick clip of Woody Harrelson's Cletus Kasady kind of, like, dancing around the prison? Did you see that?
Yeah, I don't think so.
It just harkened back to me the Joker movie. And how meme worthy that was, and how much that became, like, a marketing ploy that the fans came up with themselves, not even the movie itself, but the fans came up with themselves, of the Joker dancing down those stairs. And right. I see them doing it here, and I was like, oh, you want to be that so hard. You fucking want to be that so hard that you put Woody Harrelson in this dance number and you're trying to play off that.
Okay, I'm waiting for the punchline.
There is no punchline. It's not a joke.
And to me, I was like, that's when I know that you are, just like James Gunn said, you're fucking bankrupt.
Yeah. Yeah. This old crusty producer, like, you know what? I like that Joker scene. Let's try and do that.
Woody can pull it off. Woody's like, I'll do anything as long as the check is signed at the end of the day.
Yep.
It goes without saying, man. I don't know. I was pretty optimistic the first time I broke down the Venom trailer. I was very optimistic. This time around, I'm not, man. I still want to see it. I still want to see a Venom movie, but, like, I think it's more of, like, the fan in me that's like, I like the Venom character. It's one of my It's one of my favorite villains, one of my favorite anti-heroes in the Marvel universe. So I'm just happy seeing it come to screen. And I'm excited for the potential for it to be better. I just don't think it's going to be.
Right. So when they first announced this, I was very excited, obviously. I was really, you know.
We both were. Andy Serkis, really, mocap really king, directing mocap movie.
He was going to right the wrongs. And, you know, I'm really actually wondering, you know, if this is just shit trailers, you know, promotional gimmick stuff to get people back into theaters, kind of like the first movie, and it's going to play better theatrically. I don't know. I don't know. I'm cautiously optimistic. However, from the trailers, both trailers, even though I said this second one I thought was a little bit better than the first trailer, I'm still ultimately disappointed. You know, I was expecting more. I was expecting more.
Yeah, so was I. I mean, I'm still going to see this movie. And I could sit here all day and I can tell you about, you know, the ramifications of the season finale of Loki and what that's going to have on Spider-Man and what that could possibly mean for Venom and Morbius and all those other movies. I ain't got the time on this podcast to do all that. But if you watched Loki, you kind of get what I'm getting at when I say the implications, because we know that Venom doesn't quite take place in our Spider-Man's universe. That's part of the MCU. It doesn't quite take part of the MCU as a whole. But with multiple branches of reality going out there, at this point now, anything is possible. Fuck, we're even doing an entire multiverse movie or TV show, What If, that is now, they did say, I didn't bring it up in news, but I say Bradley and Marvel have said, like, that is canon. So What If is canon. So we got all that shit going on. We got a multiverse of madness coming up, and we got a Spider-Man movie, which is also going to deal with multiverse bullshit. Very possible that by the next Venom movie, should enough of you go out and see this one, and Sony deems it, it doesn't matter how many of you go out and see it, Sony wants to make it happen, and they're just going to keep fucking hitting that square peg in a fucking round fucking hole, and they're going to make you want it. So it's very possible that, though it's not part of the it's not part of the greater universe now, it very well could be at some point. All it takes is a writer who says, like, yeah, that Loki thing happened, so now... It is.
I am burdened with glorious purpose.
Because money.
Yeah.
Laugh with me, Jay.
Yeah, it's sad, though. It's just fucking sad.
I know. And this is exactly what Duty was kind of like talking about when me and him talked about Loki. He's like, I don't like it. And I was like, oh, I mean, I like it. And then I started thinking about, like, now how easy it is just to write yourself out of, like, every situation by going... Loki season one finale, right? Multiverses all over the place. It's like, oh man, you just wrote yourself into a lazy writing credit for the whole rest of the MCU's life.
Massive.
How's that even possible? Multiverse. Oh, okay. Quantum. Vibranium. Multiverse. Words that we use in Marvel to just make anything possible. So that's gonna do it for Trailer Park. Me and Jay are going to be getting into our reviews in our What Are You Watching segment coming up. But before we get into that, Jay, we got to get into facts.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
It's the search for fact, not truth.
All right, our movie fact of the week this time comes from Gemma. From the Cod Swallop podcast. So I reached out to everybody on social media, both on Twitter and Instagram, and I asked them to provide their favorite movie fact. So you're going to be able to do this as well, listeners. And if you follow us on social medias, you can catch me on Twitter at SuperMoviePod. You can catch me on Instagram, SMB Dave on there. Jay, you can also submit them to Jay. Jay, where can they catch you at?
Yeah, Instagram, SuperMovieBros, on Facebook, SuperMovieBros podcast, and on Instagram, Jay_SMB.
So you can reach out to us on our social medias there, or what I prefer, and this is what I'd prefer, is if you use the Super Movie Bros hotline. And it is 267-590-9042. For international, that is 1-267-590-9042. And that's the Super Movie Bros hotline. So you just go on there and you leave your favorite movie fact, and we will play it on the show at the end of every month. We will choose which person had the best movie fact, whether it's a funny movie fact, interesting movie fact, or just fucked up movie fact. Anything you want. Share your favorite movie fact with us. At the end of every month, we'll pick someone out. They'll get a sticker pack. It'll get sent over to them via mail, unless you're international, in which case you just get a picture of stickers. There's a picture. Enjoy. But you'll but you will get to, you know, reign supreme as a champion for 1 month until we get into the next month of it. I just want to do a little bit of like interaction with everybody. I mean, obviously movie facts is like one of our favorite parts of the movie cocktail episodes that we do. If you don't want to leave a message, you can also record your own message and email it to us, supermoviebrospodcast@gmail.com. But Jay, this week's comes from Gemma. She reached out to us on Twitter, and her favorite is the snow in The Wizard of Oz is asbestos. And one of my favorite things about this, Jay, is that...
Well, let's just say Gemma's from the Talking Cod Swallow podcast.
Yeah.
Based out of England. Yeah, so she will be able to, you know, qualify, actually receive some stickers.
I don't know if I'm sending stickers across the pond. She doesn't get them. It's too expensive. The post is too expensive. Yes. Too rich for my blood. I'll find some other way to give them something if she should win. But, Jay, I had to explain to you what asbestos was. Which,
well,
I love when I know things that you don't.
I vaguely knew what it was in theory. I just didn't know in detail, and I knew you would know. So that's why
poisoning
I kind of brought it up.
You know, cancer caused by asbestos is it's like a hot button topic. I feel like you can mention asbestos to like a 4 year old, and they'd be like, "Oh, that's bad."
I know it's bad.
But Jay's like, I don't know what that is.
Did not say that.
I think it's funny that, like, you know, old Hollywood was like notorious for like poisoning their starlets essentially so that they would lose weight if they gained just like a pound or two, or God forbid they had a baby. It's just like, drink this, you're gonna shit that baby out, and then you're gonna continue filming this movie. Like, they were awful to stars back in the day, but they were even awful when they didn't even know that they were being awful. Like, old Hollywood is just a fucking wild west, man.
It really was.
You did anything you wanted. Or it's like, hey man, we got to like blow up this thing, and it's like, how are we gonna do it? We're gonna throw live grenades.
No. We'll do it live. Fuck it. Do it live.
No, seriously, no, live grenades. Cowboy movies. Or it's like, we need to shoot
amazing.
That sign, and the sign spins around. How do we do that? Oh, he's gonna shoot that sign. Right, but how do we make it spin? No, he's going to shoot that sign. With real bullets? With real fuck? Of course, with real bullets. On a set? On a set? Yes, real bullets. Old Hollywood was just like, they were so preoccupied with whether they could, they never stopped to think whether they should. And that goes into even dropping asbestos on actors and actresses. Of course, they didn't know the effects of asbestos. That wouldn't come out until nearly the 1960s, 70s, and 80s. But it just gives like a whole new meaning of her like dying in the poppy field. Oh, poppies. She falls to the ground. That's asbestos poisoning happening in real time. And then real quick, that's the one that gets submitted. My dad can just have a sticker pack, but my dad did submit one to me, and I liked it. So I'm going to read it on here. I'm going to share it with you guys because it's from one of my favorite movies that I think is underseen, and I want more people to see it. So my father shared one, which is about The Great Outdoors, 1989 comedy starring John Candy and Dan Aykroyd, and I want everyone to check it out. But anyway, in a scene where the two brother-in-laws are kind of sitting on a back porch of their summer rental house. Roman is drinking from a Return of the Jedi novelty glass, which I believe you got from Burger King, and his has Jabba the Hutt on it. And Chester, Chet, is drinking from a novelty Return of the Jedi glass with Luke Skywalker on it. And I told my dad, it's like kind of interesting because Roman is a very gluttonous character. He's all about, he's greed, he's rich, he's gluttonous, where Chester is very much the hero of his own story. You know what I mean? Like, he's the father. He's the one that works hard so his family can go on vacation. His family should want to spend time with him. They should be grateful for this and stuff like that. You know, so... I thought it was interesting that each of those characters had these glasses and stuff like that. And I've seen that movie 999 motherfucking times, and I never once caught a Star Wars reference in it. So my dad gets a sticker pack just because he's me dad. So I'm just going to take him a sticker pack, and I'll drop it off to his house when I see him this Saturday. So that's been facts. Don't forget.
Congratulations.
Don't forget, we'll be doing it again next week, and I would love for people to leave us voicemails on the Super Movie Bros hotline, 267-415-6507, or record a message and email it over to
please
us.
Please do.
Super Movie Bros Podcast at gmail.com. Jay, what have you been watching?
What are you watching?
What are we watching?
He's trying to watch some illegal channel.
Oh, wait, watching.
No, go past this part. In fact, never play this again.
Jay, what have you been watching this week?
Not a terrible amount, but I did catch up with this old movie that I've been meaning to watch for a very long time, directed by Gus Van Sant, based on the true story. From 2018, Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot.
I've heard you've mentioned this movie before on the show. I just thought the title was fucking hilarious.
Yeah. Oh, it is, and I'm sure that's why it flopped.
It's also a guy in a wheelchair, right?
Yeah. So
you've talked about this movie on the show before. I don't know whether you reviewed it.
No, I definitely did. I never watched it until now.
But I remember you talked about it.
Joaquin Phoenix, he plays this character John Callahan, who was a notorious alcoholic. Got in this accident, lost his ability to pretty much move most of his body. He was in a wheelchair and had to come to terms with his alcoholism and himself, but also find new life as a cartoonist and find that dark sense of humor as a cartoonist and get published in the papers. And he became rather famous in that kind of regard. So great ensemble. It touches on a lot of different aspects of sobriety and coming to terms with change and coming from the darkness back into the light again and finding hope and a new path of way of life.
So, streaming anywhere?
This is streaming on Amazon Prime.
Cool. And you recommend it. You're recommending it?
Yeah, it's an easy watch.
For the Darren Aronofsky crowd.
Well, yeah, it's an easy watch. It's a Gus Van Sant film.
Gus Van Sant.
Gus Van Sant film. And it's not a must watch, I will say that. But if you have nothing to put on, it's certainly worth a watch. And, it's based on a true story. So go for it.
If this was an indie corner, I'd say it's the tale of a man who has his wheelchair stolen from him. And he seeks revenge on those that stole his wheelchair in a bloody rampage, at the speed of a tortoise because he's crawling towards his revenge. But he'll get there eventually.
He is really funny on that fucking thing because that wheelchair flew, I mean, really fast, and he's zooming around like no other.
All right, man. Real quick, I got down to watching some trash TV, just some absolute trash, and sometimes trash is nice. Like it's shut your brain off. I'm just a raccoon digging through the trash can. I've never been happier. Me and my wife, we finished up Game of Thrones. I'll be honest, Game of Thrones, it doesn't sting so much. Watching that series finale for the second time. I've gone through the series a bunch of times leading up to that eighth and final season, but I've never gone back and watched the eighth season after watching the whole show. Don't get me wrong. I don't agree with everything that happened in it. I don't like everything that happened in it. However, I'm just saying it stings less. And everybody knows who's been listening to the show. That's kind of like my mantra. A bad movie stings less over time, and you find good things about it to enjoy. Hence why I'm still excited for Venom 2, even after the original Venom, because I think every time I've seen Venom from here on out, it's like, it stings less. It's not as bad, because I can just ignore the bad parts and watch the good parts. But me and my wife decided like it's just time for true shut your brain off veg out TV. So we watched two shows of a similar vein. We watched Too Hot to Handle season 2 on Netflix. This is the show that puts a bunch of hot young singles onto an island and then tells them no sex, no kissing, no masturbating, no nothing. There's $100,000 in a pot. That one person will get the win at the end, but anybody who breaks those rules and starts taking money from said pot. It is melodramatic. It is ridiculous. These people are the most vapid, shallow, awful people, and you will get to watch their personalities evolve a minuscule amount by the end of the show. It's just fun to watch.
So you become a better person from not ejaculating.
I don't know if you become a better person. I said a minuscule amount. Like, right?
Well, technically.
We're talking about like maybe your mama made you go to church and you're like, you know what? Maybe I won't be so much of a dick. And that lasts for about a week. And then you're like, nah, I'm much happier being a dick. I fully expect that all these people will turn to their wicked lives. Like, they're all like Instagram influencers and models and stuff like that. So they really play up on the vapid, shallow nature of most of them. I don't think that all of them are really as bad as they portray them on the TV, but they're producers and they want to make entertaining television, and this is what's entertainment, and it truly is. If you're not into trash TV, obviously ignore it, but if you've watched like The Circle and you've watched like other things of this vein, definitely check it out. But one that I enjoyed more than Too Hot to Handle, it is new to HBO Max. It's called F-Boy Island, I believe.
I heard F-Boy, about that.
F-Boy something. So essentially, three single women are there on the island to find a man, and they have to sift through the 24 candidates that are put in front of them. Several of them are 12 of them are fuckboys, 12 of them are nice guys, and they're going to have to eliminate the F-boys, the fuckboys, and try to leave it down to just the nice guys. But one of the things that I love is, like, they never shine a light on the women, like, in a negative way, and that's fine. But, like, the women are very shallow. Like, they are very shallow. Like, one of them is an Instagram influencer. The other one's, like, a designer and stuff like that. The other one's a fashionista. So it's, like, they are shallow by nature. And
I
they
think
are
that's
clearly
what turned me away from it, because that's exactly what my takeaway was. I'm like, those yeah. three girls are not attractive to me. So why
no,
would
no,
I care
no. yeah,
about
exactly.
watching these dudes fucking around?
My wife was like, I mean, are they pretty to you? And I was like, only the one. And I was like, she's pretty, but I mean, like, then you hear her talk and she's like, oh my god, that guy, like, did you see his arms and like his beard and like his hair? And I was like, oh my god, like, they are literally selecting men based on their looks, and that's fine. Men have objectified women for so long, let's get a little bit of TV where women are objectifying men. I don't care. I was entertained by this trash, and I have a lot of fun sitting there guessing, like, at the end when they're eliminating somebody and they're like, are you a nice guy or are you a fuck boy? And he's like, I'm a nice guy. And it's like, oh, you guys keep eliminating the nice guys. Stop doing that. You're leaving yourself with just fuckboys.
Because they got no game. They can't talk the talk.
It's wonderful trash TV. Honestly, truly wonderful. Only first three episodes were up on HBO Max when me and my wife watched it by this Friday. The fourth episode will be out. It will be part of my Friday watch list. For sure. I am going to watch. I'm going to continue watching the shit out of this trash. I don't care. It's fun. I love it. All right, Jay, what else did you get down to watching this week?
I got myself to the theaters and saw a proper indie ditty called The Green Knight.
Oh, so we have to put on your square framed glasses. You have to put on your suspenders and snap them just right, just like that. Oh. That indie guy that we saw standing right next to us, that broken goblet on Friday.
Hardcore.
Oh my god, we are talking slacks up to the navel, with checkered pants, with suspenders on,
uh-huh.
over top of a t-shirt that he's owned since high school,
uh-huh.
with a curled mustache,
uh-huh.
and glasses,
uh-huh.
with mop top.
We're not
curly
even
hair.
Lying. We're not even lying.
This dude looked exactly like I described Jay for Indie Corner. So Jay, go do your best cosplay of that guy. Pour yourself a bourbon neat, and let's get ourselves into Jay's Indie Corner. All right, Jay, you got yourself out there and you saw David Lowry's.
Yes, sir. Mr. David
Lowry.
Brought
to us by A24, which you've been gargling the cum of A24 since they started, or since they became like a bigger movie house, probably about
from the get-go, I was. But, yeah. You know, as people should. You should be gargling it. It tastes good.
They drink their pineapple juice,
yeah,
that's for sure.
Exactly. You know, now since I'm actually dating, I make sure I have a glass every morning.
Stop it. Women are not eager to swallow your cum. All right, Jay? Just be a good boy
what you say, David.
Ask them politely where they'd like it to go.
I do.
Where would you prefer me to finish? Because honestly, as a man, I don't really care where I finish. I actually prefer that you direct me where to finish, because I'll just do it anywhere.
David Lowery's behind A Ghost Story, Pete's Dragon, The Old Man and the Gun, Ain't the Body Saints. So he's done some interesting properties.
I loved Pete's Dragon, man. Made me cry. I think it's one of the undersung Disney movies that has come out in like the past decade.
And Pete's Dragon was really good. I've heard that quite a bit from people. And this stars Dev Patel. And this...
Well, don't get into it, because it's an indie corner, Jay. I got to do my fake synopsis.
Yep, go ahead.
You got to jump
into it.
Go ahead. So Green Knight is the story of a man who starts a grow facility in his local impoverished neighborhood. He opens up a medical marijuana dispensary connected to this grow facility. He starts to begin to make money, and what happens is the violence that goes on in and around his neighborhood, he's decided that it's enough. He's made enough money that he can fund himself as a superhero who goes out there and defends his neighborhood against the ne'er-do-wells. And of course, everything about the Green Knight is weed related. I'm basically pitching Blunt Man and Chronic. I realize that. I after I just started saying all this, I realized that this is Blunt Man and Chronic. But he wears a green clad outfit and goes out there and fights crime with bong nunchucks and other, just picture Batman, but like a stoner Batman. He's the Green Knight. That's what I got for a fake synopsis. I was going to go longer with it, and until I realized I was pretty much doing Blunt Man and Chronic without even realizing that I was doing it. And now that I do, Kevin Smith has he just served me with a cease and desist order. So it happens that quick. He did an Instagram post where he's
he came over Route 1 across the border, and he came over and dropped it off at your house.
Yeah. So exactly. So he's filming Clerks 3 right now in Atlantic Highlands, his old stomping grounds, his old home. And while they were filming, three little girls set up a lemonade stand, and they put up signs that they are the next generation of clerks. And he said that they were very industrious little girls, because it was actually a hot day and they were all filming outside. So many of the crew had dropped their coin on their lemonade stand, and he was very happy to go there, buy his lemonade, and leave his cease and desist letter with the little girls, because they were essentially touting themselves as the junior clerks. Obviously, he's kidding, but I thought that was funny. So, Clerks 3 is coming out. That's fun.
It is fun.
All right, Jay. David Lowery's Green Knight. I'm hearing a lot of buzz about this. I'm not reading reviews, but I've spoken to a few people on Instagram, other movie reviewers that do like brief reviews and stuff like that. And some of them that I trust, and I trust the reviews a little bit more than you, because they like a lot of the same movies that I like. They are saying it's fantastic as well. So,
you tell me a tale of yourself, so that I might know thee.
I have none to tell.
Yet, you have none to tell yet.
Yeah, you're not going to find too many negative ones, to be honest, I think, out there. But ultimately, this is a fantasy, and it's a grounded fantasy that is shot immensely gorgeous. I mean, it's phenomenally shot. And
honestly, that's my biggest fear of this movie, is that, like, I know it looks gorgeous. I've seen the posters. I've watched several of the trailers right now. I love Dev Patel, and he's a gorgeous man, and every visual and still I've seen from this is fucking gorgeous. It still looks like this is going to be boring as fuck to me.
And it will be, because that's my biggest problem about this movie, is as good as it is technically and as simple as the story is and the fantasy of it all, and the twists and turns and the craftsmanship and choices that is done later on in the film, especially because the middle drags for me. You know, this was, you know, I did have a couple of drinks before I saw this movie, so maybe that didn't help. But the point is, like, I was struggling because this is a drag of a somber 2 hours, and there is a lot of interesting things in this movie, and it talks and a lot of themes of honor. And
can I ask, based on trailer alone, how many landscape shots are there?
Oh, shitload of them. Are you kidding me?
I'm sorry. Are there a good bit? Because I saw, like, I kind of, like, in the trailer, like, at least, like, three panning landscape shots of the Green Knight going on the journey he's going on.
Half the movie, you're in landscaped areas. I mean, you know, you're on this journey finding the Green Knight. So, essentially, this is not a spoiler, the Green Knight comes to court to play a game, to challenge any knight. You strike a blow on me, you reap the rewards of my, bragging, whatever. You get my axe.
You have my sword. And you have my bow.
And my axe.
I don't know exactly what the rewards were for that.
But I get it. It's based on an old epic poem.
Correct.
I get to
embark on the exact same strike 1 year from today, Christmas. And he just bows down. He essentially gloats.
One of the takers up of the challenge is Sir Gawain, who is a sworn knight to King Arthur.
Who is Dev Patel, which was never said in the movie. So you do not know it's King Arthur, and you don't know that he has, you know.
But I do, because I know this story.
I know, but not everybody does, because they don't say.
I read this story in English lit,
right?
Well, when I was in college,
they don't say it in detail in the movie, which I do respect a lot. I'm happy they didn't do that. But he kind of laughs his way out back to his to where he's going to stay at, and you know, it's one of those interesting things where it. It's a character study for sure in some regard, and I think there's a lot of it is up to interpretation at the end for sure.
So essentially he strikes his blow, and then we are left to wait in suspense for a year until the Green Knight returns.
No. Dev Patel has to go out 6 days and go find him because it's an honorable thing. You have to be a man of your word. You have to face this game that you chose to play that the Green Knight offered.
Okay.
To go and find him out, and he has to reap the same strike that you bestowed upon him. And he decided to chop his head off like a dumbass, and now he has to get his head chopped off as well. And it's about that
journey.
But
you're not spoiling whether he gets his head chopped off or not.
No, so. I'm not. But that's okay. The game. And
the game's afoot.
And, you know, you see the journey to try and find him and the characters that he comes upon the way. And it does lead into a little bit more of a heavily fantasy element, I would say.
Very clearly. If you've seen Steel Images of the Green Knight, which they have released in the trailers
Is a real guy. That was a real guy in makeup. That's not CGI. So.
I know. Oh, I know it's not CGI, but it is a fantasy element
to
the Green Knight in and of himself.
Right. But I admire this movie a lot, and I did like it a lot, and I do want to rewatch it, and I love a good movie that warrants a great conversation after the fact with somebody. Yeah. So this is an A- for me. Mainly.
Wow. See, it's funny because you said that it was tedious. It took a lot for you to enjoy it.
But that's what struck it off. Those two notches, all from an A+ to an A down to an A-, was simply because of that fact alone. Everything else was fantastic.
What he's saying is the film is so gorgeous, the cinematography is so great, and every aspect of its visuals are so good that gets you through even the most boring moments, because you're like, I know we're getting a sweeping landscape shot, and it's gonna be gorgeous. I'm gonna come in my pants, and I can't wait for it.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's not the only reason. I mean, you want to know what's going to happen at the end. I mean, like, it's, you know, it's the journey, you know, when you're,
sure,
you're,
yeah,
you're, you know, that's a big part of it as well.
I love these old epic poems, which is why, like, I was so distraught when I saw Beowulf, because that's like, that was like one of my favorite, like, epic poems that I was forced to read, and I really enjoyed it, like, along with like the Iliad, the Odyssey, and stuff like that. Yeah, you know, I used to like getting these assignments in school and stuff like that, because it like, you're reading something that's written in a language that you completely understand, but the words don't make a lick of fucking sense to you, because old English doesn't translate to modern English whatsoever. It's always fun to read and stuff like that. And I remember reading that like, this story is based on one of those epic poems, and I'm pretty sure I read this in college. So
and the language is, you know, you could pick it up.
You know, No, for sure you can. But I was intrigued to watch this, and then I was like, man, I really want to go to the theaters to see this. This is not something that I want to really like catch on my home screen and stuff like that. Because I've talked about that. Like, even though I prefer to watch movies at home, I there are certain movies that I wanted to go to the theaters to see. And after watching the trailers for this, I'm like, I 100% know that I want to go to the theaters to see this. And I couldn't get myself out there this weekend because I had a movie that I could review myself.
Yeah.
And I didn't have to leave my couch to do it.
Well, Jay, I got a free ticket for you if you need to go. So let me know.
It's more of a time issue, more so than a money issue.
I know. Just saying.
I got to keep my fat ass right at home and sit on the couch, and I got to watch myself some Dwayne The Rock Johnson in Jungle Cruise.
What's out there in the jungle? It's not a fun vacation.
Well, I'm not here for a vacation.
Oh, God, sorry, Frank.
Sorry, strong form. Here we go. Oh, I got you.
Frank?
I got it.
Frank?
I don't got it.
Disney's Jungle Cruise in theaters July 30th. For parents, you can order it on Disney Plus with Premier Access. Rated PG-13.
So Jungle Cruise follows a young, smart doctor of botany who brings her brother along to a exotic land where she hires a rough, gruff, buff guide to take her to a destination so that she can find a mystical object. And if that sounds like the plot of The Mummy to you, it is. This is the plot of The Mummy. Jungle Cruise is the plot of The Mummy. Emily Blunt, Rachel Weisz.
Yeah,
Jack Whitehall, whatever the guy's name was who played her brother in The Mummy. The Rock is also Brendan Fraser. It's the story of The Mummy. But wait, there's more, because not only is it The Mummy, it's also Pirates of the Caribbean. Why? Well, because most of the movie takes place on water. And also the protagonist is not quite all he seems. They are going up against not only Germans, which, if you're talking about Pirates of the Caribbean, we're talking about the British. But in this case, you're going up against Germans during World War One. Dwayne The Rock Johnson is playing the captain, much like Johnny Depp was the captain of the ship in Pirates of the Caribbean. And then they are fighting a crew of a former expedition that went in to the Amazon jungle that were looking for this artifact, this petal that grants either immortality or heals anything, whatever it does. And they all succumbed to a curse, which has cursed them to be part of the jungle. One of them is snakes. One of them is bees. One of them is vines. Another one is mud or muck and stuff like that. And of course, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, Much like Jack Sparrow, shares the curse of the rest of the crew of the Black Pearl with them. It's pirates. We couldn't get Johnny Depp because there's so much legal issues around him. His waters are a little muddy, so we just went to Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and we're like, you want to do a Pirates movie? He goes, well, no, I don't think I could do that. And they're like, oh, don't worry, you don't have to do that. We're just going to write another Disney ride in the exact same vein that we did Pirates. I'm not knocking Disney for doing this at all. I think that their theme park rides, there's a lot to mine there for some decent stories. And honestly, Jungle Cruise, it's just that. is decent, man. It's decent. It's fine. I had a lot of fun with it. I had a lot of laughs. It's that type of summer blockbuster, you know, action comedy movie, much like the other two movies that I'm comparing it to. It's just like The Mummy. It's just like Pirates. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, this type of movie, it's a ton of fun. It wants to be Indiana Jones, but it's just not good enough to be. But it's the next best thing. It's Pirates. It's just a fun time. It's fun. It's nothing special at all. I don't want to get like too deep into it.
But I heard the CGI is much more subpar than you would expect from movies
it
nowadays.
It very much is, and I'm not sure if at some point in post-production they had already known that it was going to be getting this half theater, half Disney Premiere Plus or Disney Plus Premiere release, because from what we thought, this was getting released in theaters wholesale right up until about like a month ago. They started announcing that it was going to be released on Disney Plus Premiere same day and date as it's going into the theaters. And I think that probably has to do with the success that Black Widow had on Disney Plus Premiere Access. And I think they decided once they got a good chunk of change on Black Widow for being on Disney Premiere on Disney Plus, they were like, all right, we're going to put this on Disney Plus as well. And they did. $30. You could sit there with the whole family. You can watch this. You can watch this with the whole family. I will probably show this to my daughter this weekend because I really think she'd like it. And honestly, I like Emily Blunt's character in the movie. I do find some moments of her like annoying, but she is in no way like a Mary Sue or anything like that. I think it's nice to see a strong but not overly strong female character who is smart, and they have this great like subplot where she is trying to appeal to like this adventurers club who her father used to be a part of and get them to fund her mission to the Amazon so that she can go find this thing, and they immediately rejected her because she was a female. So there's like this subplot to it where she's kind of thumbing the nose at the men and the establishment and stuff like that. I loved all that. Mm-hmm. I thought that was fine. It's just by the time we get there and we start to meet Dwayne The Rock Johnson, it is like bit after bit after bit of just like
shtick,
you know,
what
crazy situation can we get them into, and what's a funny way to get them out of it? It's very much like that. And Jay, I know one of your favorite actors played one of the main villains in this.
Which one? Jesse Plemons or Paul Giamatti?
Jesse Plemons. Jesse Plemons plays Prince Joaquim, or Joaquim, as he keeps correcting people, and he is the son of Kaiser Wilhelm. He's traveling around the Amazon in a fucking submarine with fucking mounted machine guns, taking out this boat that Dwayne The Rock Johnson's on. He's like this constant, like looming threat, who is after the same artifact that Emily Blunt's character of Lily is going after. Also, however, they never say why Jesse Plemons' character wants this thing, right? We know why Lily wants it. She wants it because she wants to share it with the world. She wants to heal. She wants to heal sickness. She wants to cure plague. She wants to make the polio lame walk again. Like she wants to make this discovery, and she also wants to be published, and she wants to be seen as a credible person in the scientific community, even though she's been looked down upon by all the men in the scientific community. So it's a twofold thing, but we have no reason why Joaquin wants it, but they give a reason why Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Edgar Ramirez, who plays the main bad guy who's cursed from the old conquistadors, Aguirre, we get an explanation for why they were there in the first place in the Amazon looking for it. So it's very strange in the fact that like it's like they wrote the story on like a napkin. Right. And they just forgot to fill out the rest. They forgot to like take each character and give them proper motivation and stuff like that. Also, the way it ends, I won't say how it ends, but like the people, the conquistadors who were formerly friends of Dwayne The Rock Johnson's character of Frank are like begging him to not do this to them. It's a fate worse than death. Please don't do this to us. And like they're begging, like, please don't. And they do it anyway. It's fucking terrible. What the like the way they describe it. It's like it's eternity spent in a suspended state and living in our own minds. It's awful. Please don't do this. And they do it to them.
Jeez.
And Dwayne The Rock Johnson has a he has a pet jaguar. So,
oh, that's fun.
Yeah, he has a pet jaguar, which I thought was fine. The CGI on the jaguar is terrible because my eyes know what a jaguar is supposed to look like. I can go to Elmwood Park Zoo and I can see jaguars all around that motherfucker. You know, they have several of them. And then I was like, oh well, never mind. It's the Uncanny Valley, like right, like CGI, at least CGI for this movie hasn't caught up to the point. Also, they're trying to make the cat more expressive and stuff like that than they're really capable of being to make it a real character in the movie, anthropomorphize it a little bit for kids. The shining thing in Jungle Cruise, the thing that's the best about Jungle Cruise, is the fact that it is punny. If you've ever gone to Disney World or Disneyland.
Like rewatchable punny, or is it like...
No. So if you've ever gone to Disney World or Disneyland, you've ever taken the Jungle Cruise ride, both of them were the ride was at each of the parks day and date when they opened. It's like one of the original rides that was ever there. One of the charms of it is that your guide will go through and they will make awful jokes the whole time. They're terrible punny jokes, but they hit you and it just works. Dwayne The Rock Johnson's character of Frank does that throughout the entire movie because he's your tour guide on the Jungle Cruise, so he's making these jokes. It's a nice tie to the ride, whereas like if you've been to Disney World, you've taken that ride, it's the charming part of the ride. It brings a little bit of levity to it as well. It brings the fun to it. I enjoyed that aspect as someone who likes to go to Disney World and really enjoys that type of stuff. So that is like its shining moment. But other than that, this is a generic summertime action blockbuster made by Disney that is exactly like other generic action blockbusters that came out around it. The only difference is I have nostalgia for the original Pirates because I was young when that came out and I loved it. I have nostalgia for The Mummy because I was young when that came out and I loved it then. I'm not going to develop that same level of nostalgia for this. If anything, I'm older, I'm wiser, I'm looking at this and I went, I've seen all this shit before. I'm not dying to watch it again, but if someone's like, you want to watch this? I'll be like, yeah, it's fine. Yeah, it's a C for Jungle Cruise.
Yeah, it sounds about right. That sounds about right. Yeah.
It's not a failing grade or anything like that. It's just like it is what it is. You know,
it's below average, but like you know, but same time, it's you know, it serves its purpose for what I guess they were trying to achieve. You know, they were really It seemed like they did exactly what they were trying to do. Now, whether or not audiences were trying to get behind it or not,
What I think what they wanted to do though was they wanted to get families out to the theaters to see it, but I think you know they took a look at the landscape and they were just like, we stand to make more money on this if it's going to be released in it alongside with Disney Plus. And I can't fault them for that, even though we're currently like in the middle of a massive lawsuit between Scarlett Johansson and Disney, where you know Disney is not paying her basically the back end of the box office. She took a pay cut to make Black Widow for a back end of the box office for a certain percentage, and she's now not getting that because it was released in theaters and in Disney Plus, or at least she's not getting the full amount that she would have had it not been released on Disney Plus. So there's a lawsuit. Me and Jay didn't do it in news because I think it's a plain and simple answer. This is going to settle out of court for more than likely what the movie was projected at being. Yeah. She'll get paid
it
by Disney.
And also, and to be honest, this is also going to spread to Cruella for Emma Stone, potentially even this movie, Jungle Cruise. I mean, like, there's, you know, you just...
Well, this will set the precedence. And, yeah. and I think it's very easy because I think Warner Brothers already set the precedence for that lawsuit in the fact that before it even got to a lawsuit, Patty Jenkins and Gal Gadot were paid by Warner Brothers what Wonder Woman 2 was projected at being at in the theaters. They were just paid by Warner Brothers the back end that they potentially could have gotten if projections were met. And that's it. And I think Gal Gadot is probably happy with that. I think Patty Jenkins is probably happy with that.
Oh, I think they definitely are, especially with the results.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it was going to perform much more below than what their initial expectations were going
to
be.
I think that's what Disney will wind up doing. I think it's also the right thing to do. And it's and I know I've seen a lot of people getting extremely upset with like Scarlett Johansson. And it's like, she signed a contract with one of the biggest companies in the entire world. I understand she's one of the highest paid actresses in the entire world, but what her salary is, it pales in comparison to what Disney's is. And I'm not just saying that she should be paid this because there are big corporations and big corporations owe people. It's not that. It's that a contract is a promise.
It's business. That's all it is. You know,
Kevin Feige's come to her defense. And I think for Bob Disney
Iger,
to get like
Bob Iger,
yeah, Bob
too.
Iger came, but also like I think for Disney to get like real chippy with it, where real fucking petty with them being like, oh, Scarlett Johansson, way to really like basically stand up during a pandemic and stuff like that and lampoon us for doing what's right and what's safe. And it's like that'd be great if you could stand on that moral high ground if you didn't release this in theaters and only released it on Disney Plus. But you didn't. You released it in theaters and Disney Plus. You tried to get your cake and you tried to eat it too. And now you're trying to throw shade, which is even worse because it makes you look worse. If there's a lawsuit, shut your fucking mouth. That's corporate. That's corporate speak. If there's a lawsuit, you don't say a fucking word. But yeah, I just wanted to touch on that a little bit. I don't think Scarlett Johansson's in the wrong. I think she's going to get the money that's owed to her based on the projections.
Yep.
I think Disney will happily pay it. And I really don't. Like, a lot of people are like, "Man, this is going to like ruin her career with Disney, or it's going to like suck." I don't think so at all. I don't think movie studios really hold it against actors and actresses for filing lawsuits.
You're not going to hear much about this ever again from Disney.
No, because the people making the movies are not the execs, right? They're not the people at the top. They're not the people that are in charge of the money. They are the people that spend the money that make the movies. So Kevin Feige will go, yeah, we're going to pay Scarlett Johansson another X amount of millions of dollars because we're bringing Black Widow back. That's why we're paying her. Why? Because I think it's needed for the story. Why? Because I make you money. Shut the fuck up and stop asking why and just do it. And that's what it comes down
Yeezer.
To. I think that court case, which will probably be in limbo for a little while. But I think it might be enough to just like to just make Disney. You know, if there was back end for Jungle Cruise, I think they're just going to pay it to Dwayne and they're just
Emily
Blunt.
They're going
to
do it.
Let it get to another lawsuit.
No, they're going to clean up their act now, along with every other studio and star. They're going to just try and do this, you know, behind closed doors because it's just too risky putting it in public.
For sure.
It's just way too much.
So that's going to do it for Super Movie Bros this week. That's been that's also been Hollywood Legal Speak with Dave and Jay. I don't know why me and Jay always love talking about like this Hollywood legal bullshit. It's a ton of fun.
Yeah. It's a ton of fun. You know, it's not the normal shit, you know, and it's also something that we can get a little bit more opinionated on because it's a little bit more off the cuff and a little bit
different. Oh my God, hold on. Just to make comparisons to Jungle Cruise and Pirates of the Caribbean more, I'm looking through the quotes because I was trying to find one of the bad jokes. Frank actually says to Lily at one point, if you believe in legends, you should believe in curses too, right? Which just sounds a whole lot like, you better start believing in ghost stories, Miss Swan. You're in one.
It's very good, Jeffrey Rush. Yeah.
Thank you.
Captain Barbosa, should I say.
So one of the jokes that he says is, I get paid by the number of people I take out on a Jungle Cruise, not how many people I bring back, which is a classic line of a lot of the captains there on the Jungle Cruise when you go out on it. So anyway, that's going to do it for Super Movie Bros this week. Don't forget to submit more of your favorite movie facts over on our hotline, which is 267-590-590. 905
42.
Or record a message and email us at supermoviebrospodcast@gmail.com. If you want to comment on anything we said in the show, you can reach out to us on our social medias. You can reach me on Twitter at supermoviepod. You can reach me on my Instagrams, my personal Instagram. It's SMB Dave over there.
Yep. You can also reach me on Instagram, supermoviebros, on Twitter, J_SMB, and Facebook, Super Movie Bros Podcast.
And you best start believing in prolapsed anuses, because you're in one. I don't know what's with me in like prolapsed anus. I just feel like it's like the funniest insult to like tell somebody. I don't know why. So I want to thank all you guys. Oh, wait. I forgot some other lines. I forgot some other ads.
Yeah, throw them out there.
Yeah, throw them out there. So our trailer park music comes from our good friend Thomas Iannucci. You can catch all of his music over on Spotify. That's Thomas Iannucci. Find him on Spotify. We are, of course, part of a network. We are part of the Age of Radio Podcasting Network. So you can head over to ageofradio.org. Check us out over there on our page where you get a handy dandy little media player, which will play all the episodes of Super Movie Bros that are available for you. And you can also check out all the other great shows that are part of the Age of Radio Podcasting Network. You want to catch some of our Patreon stuff, where we probably talk about prolapsed anuses a whole lot more.
Ooh, yeah.
Head over to patreon.com/supermoviebrospodcast. I want to thank all of you guys for listening. Have a great one. Cheers.
Cheers.
What's up, everybody? This is Joey Galvez. I want to tell you guys a little bit about the Department of Meta Human Affairs. This one is a story about a team led by a retired sidekick, two felons, a failed actor from Broadway, and a reprogrammed cyborg. But their first mission is to stop the criminals who have robbed a bank, and they will have to set the world at ease. You're going to get 180 pages of entertainment, action-packed awesomeness right here in the first six issues in a collected hardcover volume one. All you got to do is head on over to kickstarter.com and type in the Department of Meta Human Affairs or DMA and check it out right now.